This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Mary Bridges at Gusbourne Estate in Kent.
Yeah, we're in Kent.
It's English Wine Week this week, so we thought it would be a great opportunity to come down and talk to you, Mary, who is the head winemaker here at Gusbourne. And we're going to, first of all, in this show, we're going to find out all about English viticulture, English wine, where we're at. And we're going to talk a wee bit about doing a profile on Gusbourne as well. So how are you, Mary?
Yeah, I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
That's right. Everybody said you look younger than you really are. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I think that's good genes, and I'm glad. It'll see me well into the future.
Yeah, you're sorted for the next 30 years. Lovely, lovely. So tell us, Mary, just to get to know you before we get into the show, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself? I remember you said earlier you went to Plumpton.
Yes, I did. So I actually grew up near Inverness, so northeast of Scotland.
Quite a hotbed of viticulture up there.
And I, when I left school, which was sort of 2010, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I didn't have a real strong passion to go and do something at university. So I did what lots of us do and joined the hospitality industry. And quite quickly, just realised I loved wine, loved talking about wine, learning about wine. So did some WSET courses. I did level 3 and loved that. I was, you know, growing up in the northeast of Scotland, not a lot happens up there. So I was probably quite naive, and going to London for 2 weeks for this course was a big scary step. But I loved it, met some really great people and realised kind of how big the world was. And that was it, really. I knew I wanted to be in wine. I thought originally it would be in hospitality, but there wasn't really a reason I left the industry. I just really got so passionate. I thought, I'm going to go and learn how to make wine. My dad was a farmer as well, so kind of agriculture was in my upbringing. So I joined Plumpton in 2017, moved to Sussex, didn't know a soul, got off the train and went to the place I was renting a room from some people in Plumpton, and kind of got there and thought, oh, what do I do now? You know, I've got a week until I start my course. I'm a bit lonely. But as soon as I sort of got into the program and met people, I loved it. It was the best thing I've done. I didn't know what I would get at the end of it. And part of doing it was figuring that out. And I wouldn't have met Charlie, who was the winemaker at Gusbourne at the time, had I not done that, and wouldn't be here now. So,
how did you meet Charlie? Was he running the course, or?
I can't remember exactly how we met. I helped him with some admin for a group he was part of, I think, as a Plumpton student, but didn't really speak often. And I was actually in 2018, I went to the south of France for sort of 3 and a bit months to do some seasonal green work in the vineyards, which I loved. It was sunny every day and wonderful. But I had to come back because I was still studying. That was just the summer break. And I emailed Charlie and said, do you mind if I just come along and see a day of harvest, just to see what you do, see how it runs? I know nothing at this stage. I'm really new in this. And they'd had one of their seasonal team drop out last minute. So he said, do you want to come and work the harvest? And I said, I've got to study, I've got lectures. But I was like, do you know what? I'll do it. I'll you know, cram it all in somehow. So I did. And then never really left Gusbourne. So I was part-time as I was studying. I would come in on a Monday and Friday and help disgorge and label and that sort of thing. And finished up my degree, squeezed in a harvest in Sonoma in 2019. And then spring 2020 became full-time at Gusbourne.
Okay, and when did you become the head winemaker?
2023.
Okay, so very quickly.
Yeah, quite quickly. And a lot of people tell me it's very, very quick. And, you know, it didn't really think too much about it like that. But I guess it is. You know, I hadn't been out of Plumpton very long. My experience was mostly at Gusbourne. But I was very keen and progressed through the team quite quickly. So started off as cellar hand. As people kind of left, I became assistant winemaker. And then kind of ended up, the person who was running the lab at the time, she moved on, so I took the lab under my remit, and then ended up doing a load of the technical stuff under Charlie. When we found out he was leaving, I thought, I need to throw my hat in the ring here and we'll see what happens. And I got the role. So was delighted, a little bit taken aback for a few days, but really delighted. And it was just before harvest. It was early September that he left. So straight into the 2023 harvest. But we had a team of people that had worked, you know, with Charlie, under Charlie, for the same amount of time as me, really. The core winemaking team. So apart from Charlie being gone, everything else was kind of the same.
Yeah.
And the processes were the same. We know what we're doing. We were well drilled. So it was actually quite nice to have that harvest is the thing I went straight into, because it's familiar and less time to worry about being the head winemaker of Gusbourne.
Cool. Okay. Well, let's talk a wee bit about English viticulture, because it is English Wine Week that we're recording the show, and it's going up during English Wine Week. Do you know how many wineries there are in the UK now?
Yeah, so we're over 200 wineries now, which is, when I remember when I was studying at Plumpton, I could probably give you the names of, I don't know, 5 or 10 quite easily. And now there are so many, you know, we're spoiled for choice of really great wineries and winemakers.
I know when I first got in the trade, I pretty much, I didn't know them all, but I knew most of the players. Mm-hmm. And now there's just too many to keep up for me.
Yeah, every year. So, you know, we just had the Wine GB Awards announced, which is great, great timing for English Wine Week. And there's loads to celebrate. And there are wineries that have, you know, gold medal winners from all over the country now making all styles of wine, which is it really makes you realize how far we've come in such a short space of time. It's brilliant.
Yeah, no, that's cool. So 200 wineries, do you know how many hectares out there?
We're over 4,000 hectares. I think it's about 4,200.
So the size of a large Australian winery.
we're dropping the ocean compared to the rest of the wine world.
Now, but 4,000's getting there.
Yeah, and it seems every year that, you know, there are still going to be more and more vines going in the ground. I think people are still planning to plant. And as I say, it's moving further north as well. It's not just the southeast and the general south. It's, you know, there are vineyards in Yorkshire now, which is remarkable.
Yeah, Livinthorpe, I think. Is it Livinthorpe? I remember going up there and visiting them. Oh, it must have been about 15 years ago. And doing a podcast with them. So, yeah, they're around, that's for sure. They're around for sure. Okay, and did you attend the Garden of Kent event about 2 weeks ago?
Oh, the Wine Garden of England thing. No, I didn't. I was on holiday.
Oh, were you?
Yeah, I was on holiday, so I missed that.
I've just done a tour with Jane of Gusbourne, particularly the viticultural areas, and they're quite a few of the people on the tour have done it, that attended it this year or last year, and they said it was a very good event. And Gusbourne was there, weren't you?
Yeah, Gusbourne, we were there. I think it might have been Dan who was there for us. But we're involved in those things all the time. We love celebrating the Wine Garden of England and being alongside some other super wineries and just really showcasing what we're doing in this little corner.
Okay. Just moving into Gusbourne, obviously Gusbourne does sparkling wines. We've tried about 6 sparkling wines this morning, so that's quite nice, and getting a feel for it. And you're doing some unusual stuff, which you might touch on, but you're also doing some still wines as well, although you've really only planted Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, Meunier. What's going on there? Why didn't you think about Bacchus or any of those other grape varieties?
So when the John and Andrew Weber, who are founder, when they first planted, sparkling was very much the mission, and, you know, really top quality sparkling. So Chardonnay, Pinot Noir and Pinot Meunier, there was no question that those three were going in the ground. And still wine was kind of a later development for us, but we're quite low yielding in some areas. We've got the Burgundian clone, so 95 and 548 in the Chardonnay, which are really suited to still wine. We just kind of, and through a bit of trial and error in the early days, figured out that actually some of these lower yielding blocks with these clones, if we treat them like still wine vineyards, we can make some really good still wine. And I guess the reason we haven't planted anything else is because we love what we're doing with the three varieties that we have and haven't really felt the need to plant other varieties. We've got lots of clones of the three varieties that we do have, different rootstock combinations as well. I think when we do the maturity analysis in the run-up to harvest, we're we're running analysis on over 100 individual blocks that we might pick in. So that's how we've broken it up to give ourselves all these options. So when we're blending, we've got all these layers that we can use. So that's why there was just never a reason not to really go for Chardonnay and Pinot Noir for still. And we even do a still in certain vintages, a still red Pinot Meunier, which is pretty fun too.
I saw that down in the shop earlier. We might get a bottle of that on the way out.
Oh, it's delicious.
I've never had a straight Pinot Meunier as a red wine.
Yeah.
So
they're lovely. They're the one that we do and others that I've tried. They've got they're more down the kind of crunchy red fruit profile, a little bit. It's a more rustic Pinot Noir, perhaps. Really good chilled, really good in a kind of barbecue, casual friends setting. They're a wine, they don't take themselves too seriously. I think it's great. It's good fun to have that as a sort of single vineyard, single clone wine.
I noticed when we were going around the vineyard, some of the vines have been ripped out. Literally ripped out, and they're going to be replanted. What's the reason behind that? Because the vines are only 20 years old. You know, you'd think they've got another 20, 30 years to go.
Yeah, it's a rootstock on that block. So it's Chardonnay on a specific rootstock that we started noticing symptoms of yield decline in that block a few years ago, but the blocks either side, totally fine. So we decided that because the yield was declining so much, it didn't make any sense to keep these vines in the ground to keep looking after them. So we've ripped them up. And it turns out that the rootstock that we've had an issue with is the same one that caused a big problem in Burgundy years ago. It was quite widely planted, and it just, similar symptoms, it just kind of started to give up the ghost, and then the yields don't become viable anymore.
Okay.
So We've ripped it up. We'd like to replant that block at some point, again, with the two Chardonnay clones, 548 and 95, but we would put them on the SO4 rootstock, which is the one that's sort of closer to the winery that's still doing really well.
Yeah, I saw SO4 written everywhere.
Yeah, we've got a lot of SO4. It works for us.
The other thing I noticed in the vineyard was what the tour guide, Dan, is Dan, isn't it?
It's Dan, yeah.
Yeah. He was talking about water shoots. And you don't really, I mean, I don't use the term water shoots ever, but I'm not a viticulturist. Do you want to explain what water shoots are and what's going on there?
So I wouldn't really call it a water shoot. It's a retrunking more than a water shoot. So it's a shoot that's come off above the graft. So it's still the vinifera. So it's still that clone. It's just coming from lower down. And the reason we're re-trunking is because some of the heads of the vines, the crown, have become quite crowded where the pruning's been quite close together over the years. So by establishing a new trunk, you can reset, reposition the buds, and you can be really respectful of the sap flow as well and extend that out so you're not getting a crowded crown, which just reduces disease pressure. It's a bit more qualitative for the vines.
Is that because in winter, when you're doing the winter pruning, you just were a little bit too aggressive in terms of where you're putting the cuts, or what was going on?
I think possibly, and you know, being a new industry, every year that we've done something here, we've learned a lot from. So back in the early days, maybe the cuts weren't so precise, or they were a bit too close. So when you get a bit of the dieback, it kind of creates a very sort of hectic crown. But there's been a lot gone into researching pruning, having experts come to the UK. I think Simonet and Search have been to the UK a few times now, who do the gentle pruning method, and just kind of sharing their expertise and why it's important to get those cuts right, leave a bit extra on the end, you know, respect the sap flow.
Let's talk a wee bit about Gascoigne, the history of it and where it started. It was one of, I wouldn't say it was one of the first vineyards, but it's certainly one of the bigger vineyards now. I think we said it had 150 hectares, which is a decent size. I mean, I think someone, I was at a Wine GB conference and I was saying the average UK vineyard size is like 2 or 3 hectares. So it makes you quite a big player in the UK scene.
Yeah, so we're 90 planted, and that's across Kent and West Sussex as well. And then we've got more, which is planted. There's lots of ancient woodland and other sort of arable plots out there as well. But 90 hectares that are under vine, which is one of the largest, or it was. I know there are loads of vineyards going in the ground, so I think it won't be long before there are bigger. But for a long time, we've been one of the bigger estate-owned, grown, full control with us kind of operation. So a true estate vineyard.
All right. And when was it first planted?
2004. So I think Gusbourne was established in 2003 by Andrew Weber. So he saw the land and had a crazy idea of English viticulture, and it was a crazy idea at the time. So he planted in 2004, had this vision to make a world-class sparkling wine. John Pollard, who's our vineyard manager, he was employee number one, so he helped Andrew get these vines in the ground and has seen everything since, which I think is great that he's still here, because occasionally you have a question from way back when, and there aren't many people that can answer those questions from way back when. And the first vintage was taken in 2006, so very young vines at that time. And that first vintage was released in 2010. So it's a long time from putting the vines in the ground to getting that first wine out the door. But those early days were really important, setting the foundations for where we are now. So I'm so grateful that he, you know, Andrew had this vision and saw it through and stuck with it.
Mm. In terms of the wines, you've been doing, I wouldn't say really weird stuff, but you're doing some unusual things. Like we had at lunchtime, we had a 2013 wine that had spent 8 years on the lees, which is a long time. You know, vintage champagne, normally they only typically do 5 years, 3 years for non-vintages. Why 8 years? What's going on there? Because you've also got some you've got some other things you can compare it against. And
the 2013 Blanc de Blanc, actually, when I joined Gusbourne, that was the current release, Blanc de Blanc. So we had some of that we kept and left to age on lees for longer. So the 8 years on lees is the late disgorged version. And we actually had two bottles running side by side for a while. So we had the cork age version, so the original disgorging, being on cork all that time. And that was when we used to use the natural cork. We've moved to DM since.
Oh, okay.
And then the late disgorge, longer on lees. So two very different styles of wine. And I find that they split the room. So the cork age suits the people that love that really kind of matured, dried fruit, nutty, very opulent, very open, very generous kind of style.
More oxidized, would you say?
Oxidative more than oxidized, I guess.
Yeah,
leaning into that style slightly, whereas the one that's been on lees for longer is still really tight. It's got a real kind of, when you first open it, it can have that real kind of struck match energy, you know, that slightly reductive feel that then sort of plays out into a beautifully mineral, citrus-driven style that actually feels, apart from the fact it's got more autistic character, it feels a more youthful wine. And that's just the protective nature of the lees. There is such a safe way to store wine on lees. It really keeps them tight and fresh and youthful.
Yeah, that's the thing that a lot of people don't realize is lees is actually antioxidant, sort of reductive is, I suppose, the word, but it keeps things fresh, isn't it?
Yeah.
Although you have to, when you talk to people about, say, Muscadet sur Lee, where they spin it on the lees, they have to do things like batonnage because they don't want the lees to get too clumpy and too reductive, if you like, and create dodgy flavours. But people never do batonnage. You don't rotate the bottles or anything like that when you're doing something that long age on the lees?
No, they're just kept on their side. I do know a producer that, not in the UK, in Sonoma, I'm sure it was over there, that they made a tiny batch of sparkling wine, but they would every couple of months go and shake everything and do kind of in bottle lees stirring kind of thing. I don't know of anyone that's doing it over here, so we just leave them flat. You think more of lees stirring happening in barrel or in tank when before wines are bottled. So I thought that was interesting, that, and it's a lot of work to go and, you know, by hand, pick up a couple of bottles, shake them, move them to the next stillage. Interesting.
You guys make a lot of different wines, though. You're talking about, you know, making a wine that's spent all its time on the lees, another one that's spent its time on cork. But there's a range of wines. There seems to be, I don't know, how many different styles of sparkling wines do you make?
We have a lot now. So we have kind of our core range of wines that we'll make each vintage. So a Blanc de Blanc, Blanc de Noir, Rosé and Brut Reserve. So that's a style that each year is quite consistent, but still has the opportunity to reflect the season that it came from. So The profile changes a touch vintage to vintage. But we, in 2017, that was the first vintage we produced some single vineyard wines. So we took two wines, Chardonnay and a Pinot Noir from the chalkier sites in Sussex, and Chardonnay and Pinot Noir from the more clay dominant sites over here in Kent, and did them as single bottlings. So that was four wines. We did another four in 2018, and we're about to release another five of those from 2019. So it's a big portfolio of single vineyard wines, but it's our opportunity when we're grading and blending to choose the components that they're not necessarily the most complete on their own. They add something of value to the blend, but there's something about them that's unique and really worth celebrating and really worth it's kind of as close as we can bring our consumers to what we're doing when we're grading and sort of highlighting those differences between the blocks.
How do you find chalky Sussex versus clay? Because you are on clay down here.
Yeah.
It's all that, it's the old London, I think they call it London Weald clay, isn't it? Or something along those lines.
So we're Wealden clay here. And it's quite heavy. It's sort of over a sandy kind of loam. And I find that it depends on the vintage as well. You'll always have a block from the other site that surprises you and doesn't do maybe what you thought it would. But generally, there's sort of a power and a generosity, and we're slightly warmer here, typically. So there's more power and personality, I think, in a lot of the Kent blocks. But then in terms of that pure acidity and mineral drive and components that give wines real length, they're in abundance on the chalkier sites. So when you bring them together, you have loads to play with to make really impactful wines that also have the ability to age for a really long time.
Okay. I normally think of clay as giving richness to wines. So if you think about Chardonnays grown on clay versus Chardonnay grown on chalk, Chardonnay grown on chalk is normally the limestone or the calcium bigs up the acidity in those wines. They just seem fresher. Whereas on clay, they tend to be richer. Is that your experience?
That's the whole point in blending for us, is that each area has its thing that makes it special. And when you start layering it up together, it becomes even better. So we have components that do all sorts of things. And it's a real fun time when we sit down and grade them all for the first time. And being vintage only, they do express themselves a bit differently year on year, just because Boot Hill, you know, a little block in Boot Hill went into Blanc de Blanc one year. It doesn't necessarily mean it will the following year. There's kind of no set recipe for making them. It really is a blank sheet. We've got the components. It was a different season. Where do we think they belong? So it's great to have the opportunity to build the blends from scratch every year with the challenge of trying to create something that still has the consistency of style.
A lot of the wines I tasted were vintage-based. Do you do non-vintage?
No, we don't have a non-vintage product at all, and we haven't. And that, again, was part of the strategy very early on, was we have the opportunity here to celebrate the seasons that we're growing the grapes in. Why wouldn't we do that?
All right, then. I think we'll wrap it up there, Mary. Thank you very much.
No worries.